ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Economics.
Joining us for a look at this week's business and finance news is the ABC's chief business reporter, Ian Verinder. Ian, good evening to you. Welcome back to Nightlife.
Thank you. Good to be here, Phil.
Housing affordability. You've written about this week, suggesting that once it was all about home ownership, it's now boiled over into the rental market. And look, it's the most talked about topic at the moment. It's the biggest marker of our inequity in society and our growing and the growing gap between those who have and those who do not.
Yeah, look, for how many decades, pretty much since the start of white settlement in this country, we've kind of defined ourselves around the whole idea of owning our own little plot of land and having a house on it, and it was largely achievable for pretty much all of us until really, I guess, the turn of the century is when things really started to, take a turn for the worse when it came to affordability. And it's now become a situation where it's so crucial to the economy that it's a very difficult thing to try and alter, because once you try and shift the dynamics behind property ownership and the price of property and how much we have to earn to put a roof over our heads, you start to tinker with some fairly fundamentals of the way our economy works, which then reverberates right through the financial system, the banks, and pretty much our entire the way we can spend. That then affects the Reserve Bank, the decisions they make around interest rates. It's become not just a utility, not just something to keep the rain and the wind off us. Mm. It's actually become an integral part of our economy.
Mm. Yes, it's become the great store of wealth for Australians, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, far and away. Mm. More than most other countries too, because
that is simply because what of the preferential tax treatment that has been given.
Oh, look, that's one of the issues. I mean, that tax treatment.
I mean, the capital gains tax treatment. Changes at the turn of the century too. That is the last century, I mean.
Yeah. There was the capital gains tax. That was, essentially weakening the capital gains tax. They decided back then that if you held an investment, and that's not just property, it's also shares and other assets. If you held an investment for more than 12 months and you sold it, you got a 50% discount on the capital gains tax, which was 50%. So, you only pay 25% tax on the income. The idea behind that, by the way, was to, some bright spark came up with the argument that, look, inflation, it's just so difficult to measure, so let's just give a discount to the capital gains tax. We'll halve it forevermore. And that's how you get it. That's how you account for inflation. Inflation's actually pretty easy to account for. I mean, you can actually figure out the date you bought something, how much inflation's been and discounted by that amount. But anyway, they've gone for that option, which was, really to strip out a hell of a lot of the tax around what you're making from the proceeds of an asset.
Is it still roughly a third? A third of people own their houses outright, a third are paying a mortgage, and a third are renting?
Yep, pretty much.
Is that changing?
Well, it is. And in fact,
if it's getting more expensive, you think fewer people would own their houses outright.
That's true. And not only, that's particularly the case. Mm. And, it's getting to the point now where more and more people are retiring with a mortgage. Mm. So you're getting, the demographics are actually working and working in fairly quickly too as well, because the age at which people buy their first home is increasing. So it used to be in the 20s, it then went into the 30s, and it's now moving higher up. Mm. And the age at which people pay off a property is actually increasing as well. And so there's a lot of people now retiring with debt over their heads. That means either they have to sell the home to, make enough money to be able to live on for the rest of their days, or take up or work longer. I mean, it's certainly altering, the way we live.
Mm. Yes, the accumulation of wealth by an older generation has resulted in the phrase "the bank of mum and dad," which has resulted in a marked and measurable increase in the amount of wealth transfer between mums and dads to their offspring.
Mm.
Once upon a time, it was relatively small. These days, it's much bigger.
Yeah, look, 20, 30 years ago, it was, you know, a fairly small percentage of people, you know, borrowed money or were given a grant from their parents. It's now makes up the bulk of transfers.
Is that right?
So first home buyers now, the bulk of first home buyers now get some kind of help from their family. Now, whether that's a guarantor arrangement with the bank or whether it's outright cash as a gift or, you know, as a loan to the parents, but it's certainly making up the bulk of, you know, and it wouldn't be for all of it. Most people would try and give their kids, I guess, a deposit so that they can go and borrow money to get into the market themselves.
It's not a one-off wealth transfer, is that? I mean, this generational transfer of wealth is unlikely to be a one-off in the sense because all that will do is entrench this big divide between people who've got property and those who haven't.
Yeah. And look, the other interesting part of this is that it's actually now becoming more expensive to rent than it is to buy. But if you can't assemble the deposit, and this is where the gulf is actually starting to widen in terms of, you know, intergenerational transfers and so forth and wealth. If you can't afford the deposit, you're going to be stuck in the rental market and you're going to be paying more of your income in the rental market than you will be as an owner-occupier.
Rental market's ridiculous. So vacancy rates are like 1%. You know, years ago when I remember last looking at it in any serious way, they used to say a rental, you can assume for investment purposes, a rental rate of around, and I should add people, by the way, I do not have any investment properties, that a rental vacancy rate of around 4% was, you know, pretty much that's what you should factor in.
Yeah.
These days it's 1%, which basically means it's impossible to rent it.
In some Australian cities, it's below 1%. Yeah. I think it's Sydney, it's right at smack on 1. And yeah, that is a super tight situation to be in. And why are we in that situation? Well, there's a couple of reasons. Mm. We've been running an extraordinarily high immigration regime.
Too many people.
Yeah. So, you know, you're adding to the demand. I mean, everyone has to put a roof over their heads. So if you're adding vast numbers of people and, you know, you can add people much quicker, much more quickly than you can build a new house or build a new block of apartments.
Mind you, we've been talking about this for some years now. I mean, this is what I don't really understand is that, and some of the excuses seem, not excuses, some of the explanations sound a bit lame to me, but, you know, classic demand supply here, isn't it? I mean, if people want houses, why aren't people building them?
Well, because it takes a lot longer to build a house than
it
is to
put... Well, it takes a year. Yeah. It takes a year to build a house.
If you want to build an apartment block, it does take longer. I mean, you know, and look, the thing is, it's not rocket science. If you can build enough dwellings to house 350,000 people, why would you import 600,000? I mean, there's an automatic problem that you've got there. And why are we encountering troubles with the building industry at the moment? Well, a few reasons. I mean, we decided to get rid of red tape when it came to the building industry. And so there's been a downgrade in the way, in the quality of building over the last few years. I mean, there was a point where, you know, a builder was responsible for his work for 7 years after completion. That's been pretty much wiped out. There's a lot of people building that don't have any qualifications whatsoever. And as a result, we're seeing all of these apartment blocks that are being built that are substandard. So there's a lot of people now thinking, do I buy something off the plan and end up with a, you know, a noose around my neck where I'm going to have to spend another $500,000 or whatever, a couple of $100,000 to fix it up? People are backing off from buying off the plan and buying new apartments. You've got the building industry itself in chaos because a lot of builders were caught out with those fixed price contracts before inflation took off.
Sure, but this is historical. I mean, this must be writing itself.
And it's running.
We've been talking about this for some years now.
There are more insolvencies in the building industry right now, in the construction industry right now, than any other industry at the moment. Mm. So it's right at the point again now, because these are long-term kind of operations. You start building a house here. If you're a builder and you've got six projects on the go, you know, you take your money, you know, deposit up front. You've got to get money coming all the way through. If there's some kind of hiccup in the middle there, and if at some stage people just decide that they don't want to buy anything new anymore, well, your industry starts to really seize up, and that is what is happening right now. So we've got that demand-supply imbalance there. Then add on to the top of that the old, you know, you mentioned capital gains tax, and you also, you know, which goes along with negative gearing. Mm. And the problem we have with negative gearing is that most investors go out and buy an existing property. So they're in the market competing with first home buyers, and they've got. Because they've got those capital, those tax advantages, they can afford to bid the price higher than a first home buyer. And so you'll end up with people owning multiple properties, and then you have first home buyers forced to go into the rental market.
We talked last week, last time we talked about Japan. Japan has relatively affordable property now.
They do.
They're a very prosperous society.
Well, they've done the exact opposite to what we've done. So in Tokyo, for instance, they actually bulldozed a lot of quite historic old suburbs and built high rises. So they, you know, hugely added to the stock of housing. And the birth rate in Japan has been very low and virtually no migration. So you've had very little demand and a lot of supply. I mean, you don't need to be an economist to figure out, well, that means the price isn't going to go up very much. So you've got, you know, more than enough housing to you know, put a roof over the head of the population. Mm. And so prices have not risen. In fact, prices have come down quite substantially in the past 30 years. It's exactly the opposite to what we've done. We keep adding more and more people, not enough supply of housing, and still we add more and more people, and we turbocharge the whole thing up with tax advantages that mean that you've got people bidding hand over fist with money that first home buyers can't afford to match.
So how do we fix it?
Well, you've got to try and unwind all that. And how do you do that? And then you get to the...
Well,
even,
I mean,
it
can't be done quickly.
No.
But it has to be done with grandfathered sort of tax changes, doesn't it?
Yeah. But what we're talking about here, what is affordability? Mm. Is it just the price of the house? Well, no, it's not. It's also how much you can afford to repay. How much of your salary is going to meeting the commitments you've made? And when we were in a 20-year-plus period of declining interest rates, where rates were really coming off the boil at a rapid clip, you know, the proportion of your income didn't rise, even though prices were rising dramatically, the proportion of money that you were paying out of your income to cover the mortgage wasn't rising that dramatically because rates kept dropping. And it was a beautiful thing for many people for a long time because you might extend yourself dramatically when you buy your house. Mm. And then within 5 years, you've discovered, well, boy, the price of the house has gone up by 25% over these 5 years. I've done magnificently. And not only that, interest rates have actually fallen during that period. So I'm not, and I've had a pay rise. Mm. So I'm actually doing pretty well. And that worked very well during that period. But then, of course, we got down to pretty much zero with the pandemic, and now rates are going up. They're never going to really get down to zero again unless there's another major economic catastrophe. Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, you've got prices still going through the roof, and you've got interest rates much higher. So the affordability crunch has really starting to bite now. And I think you're getting to a point where this is starting to boil over into the political arena. You've seen the election in Tasmania just recently where each of the major parties came out with quite radical proposals on how to solve a housing affordability crisis.
Mm, mm. Yeah.
Well, what's going to happen next? I mean, each of the other state governments, we've got state elections and territory elections coming up right across the country in the next year or so. Mm-hmm. And we've got a federal election looming. And this is going to really start to boil over into, I think, community anger. And that's when you're...
But
that's
neither
the only time
side
you,
of it. But not, nobody's planning to do anything about it.
Well, how do you fix it? You know, do you get housing prices to decline? Nobody is going to want that, particularly anybody who owns a house.
You cut back on immigration, you cut back on international students, you introduce some tax changes which are grandfathered. I mean, there are ways forward. There are solutions. Everybody should stop throwing up their hands and saying there's nothing you can do about it.
But it's got to be very gradual. You can't do something that is... Because otherwise you'll really upset the banking system and we could all end up in serious trouble. I mean, Japan, actually, if you look at the property bubble there from 1989 and the way prices came off over a 30-year period, it really did cripple the country in lots of ways. But, I mean, they're getting through it just now, from 1989 to now. Mm. So you can... I mean, we can fix this situation, but it is going to take a lot of political will. And each each time, you know, you talk about changing the tax system, you know, there's it's an easy thing for an opposition to just throw into the works, isn't it?
Oh, well. Ian, good to talk. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.